This episode of Zero to Travel is brought to you by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder with 7 drive modes. The Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. On a beautiful sunny day in Denver, Colorado, I got to take a walk with the first woman to walk around the world. Do I need to say any more? Do you think she has some stories to tell? Of course she does. You're going to hear that conversation today, plus some thoughts on walking and a couple shout outs to some lovely souls in this listening community. It's all happening right now. So buckle up, strap in. Thanks for being here and welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, my friend.
You're listening to the Zero to Travel podcast, where we explore exciting travel-based work, lifestyle, and business opportunities, helping you to achieve your wildest travel dreams. And now your host, world wanderer and travel junkie, Jason Moore.
Hey, what's up? It's Jason with ZeroToTravel.com. Welcome to the show. Thanks for hanging out, letting me bring a little travel into your ears today. This is the show to help you travel the world on your terms, to fill your life with as much travel as you desire, no matter what your situation or experience. Maybe you're on the road right now. Are you riding a horse? Are you riding a train somewhere in the middle of nowhere? Maybe you're just chilling at home or running on the treadmill at the gym. Whatever. Either way, so glad you are here. Got a wonderful show for you today. Now, a little background on today's episode. I wanted to share some highlights from the archives this month because I've done over 400 shows and there are so many incredible guests that have come on and just offered their wisdom, practical advice, amazing travel stories, all the stuff you know and love from the interviews here in this show. Inspiration. You hear my enthusiasm as I'm talking to all of these guests because I'm getting inspired, I'm getting educated, I'm getting new knowledge and new perspectives along with you. And I wanted to bring some of my favorites out from the archives this month for you to enjoy. And this one was recorded back in 2015. I got to take a walk with the first person to ever walk around the world. What an incredible experience. I never thought I'd have a chance to do something like that. And what a treat to just be able to walk side by side with her, somebody that's taken so many steps. I mean, she walked 14,000 miles across 4 continents, and she's got some stories to tell. She did an awareness campaign around this. We talk about that in the interview, and just timeless lessons here. It doesn't matter if this was recorded some years ago. It's still relevant today, and I'm so excited to bring it to you. Stick around afterwards. I will share some personal thoughts about walking and also a couple shout outs to some lovely souls here in this listening community. Now, let's slip and slide into the interview segment. Here's me taking a walk with Polly Latovsky, the first woman to ever walk around the world.
I am honored and humbled to be here in Denver, Colorado, taking a walk with someone who knows a little bit about long walks. In fact, she walked for 5 years straight through 4 continents, 22 countries, and over 14,000 miles. And she is the first woman to ever walk around the world. And she was a woman walking for women. What I mean by that is her journey was a mission to bring global awareness to breast cancer. And during her walk, she raised over $250,000 for that cause, which I gotta high five you for that.
And growing. And growing.
Her book is called 3 Miles Per Hour, The Adventures of One Woman's Walk Around the World. It is my privilege to welcome to the Zero to Travel podcast, Polly Latovsky. Thanks for being here.
Thanks. And I like that we're walking.
Yeah.
While we're talking. So officially we're walking the talk.
I figured you would.
We're
this is like your
walk.
Bit of your natural environment, I guess.
It really is.
I wanted to mention really quickly, you can find Polly's book and documentary and some of her other projects at PollyLatovsky.com, and that's L-E-T-O-F-S-K-Y. And do you still take a lot of walks like this?
Every day. I went last night for 2 hours. In fact, I just got done walking before I joined you. It's hardly a walk. It's a mosey. It's a saunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
my book would be called 2 miles an hour if
you wrote it today.
Yes.
Why did you pick this place? Because when I contacted you, I said, I didn't realize you were in Denver. I said, it'd be really cool to do this in person. And why not take a walk while you're doing it? And I love to walk too. So what was it about here that you chose?
Well, this is Washington Park, Wash Park, as the locals call it. And it's a place that you can walk without getting hit by a bike, first of all.
Right.
As opposed to the recreation trails, which are really owned by the bikers. Let's not kid anybody. And it's really a place that I meet friends a lot, and we just, again, it's hardly walk for exercise per se, as opposed to walk for therapy,
mm-hmm.
and connection, and that's what me and friends do all the time. This is my park.
Yeah.
My park.
Yeah, I thought I saw your name out there on the sign. Now, walking is super therapeutic. That's an understatement, I think.
Yeah, I agree, and I found that I just kind of did the math. I don't know this as far as scientific, but it's certainly anecdotal, that when I go and do a walk before, like at night,
mm-hmm.
I go walk for an hour, just mosey and think and maybe talk on the phone with a friend, whatever. And I just sleep so well, and I'm just so relaxed, and all the gunk that fills your head over the course of a day just kind of lifts and clears and makes sense. Mm. And when I don't do that for a couple of days, I just get anxious.
Yeah.
I just start feeling anxious.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm a big advocate of it, even to this day. I still love it to this day. I'll tell you what I still love about elements of my walk is, again, the walking every day and the clarity that it keeps your mind in. And I love discovering a new town. Every day, I love discovering a new town. I like to find the best diner in the whole town. This is my thing, right?
Yeah.
And of course, there's a lot I just don't miss about it. I love coming home every night now, knowing I have my bed and a fridge with my food in it and a blender and cats.
I also find sometimes, even in your own town, if you take a walk and just take a different route, it gives you a whole new perspective on even a place that you live.
Oh, I agree. Yes, I take a road trip all the way across the town.
Yeah. Yeah, and for me, like, because I love to hike, and that's essentially walking, but in the mountains. It clears your head, and then it's weird because when your head gets clear, then for some reason, ideas and things start pouring in, I think.
Well, you know, you really are onto something because, you know, Steve Jobs insisted. He insisted that walking helps clarify and be creative. Ben Franklin went for walks every day. Mozart went for walks all the time. So there, and there's more, there's a big list of people in it that just loved walking every day. Every day they went walking. Steve Jobs was one of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, me and Steve, we're
that's
the same.
Kin, right? I have tons of questions for you because obviously you did such an amazing journey. There's so much around it. The first question I wanted to ask, though, is from my mom because I talked to her last night. And, you know, it's funny because she's a pretty philosophical, spiritual woman. And it surprised me the question she had. The first thing she thought was, ask her how her feet held up. Because she wonders, you know, she's like, I don't know if my feet would hold up on a journey like that.
And I have really small feet.
Yeah?
You know,
well,
I have small feet. They're very narrow.
You do have
narrow,
small feet.
and they're skinny and they're flat. And all they actually held up very, very well.
Yeah?
It's really quite stunning. I went through bouts. Like 2 or 3 bouts of just getting blisters a lot. And that was primarily due to the terrain that I was on and extreme, extreme heat, meaning 110, 118 degrees, that kind of thing. And other than those bouts, which lasted about a month each, my feet really did very well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll thank New Balance for that. I insist on having New Balance shoes. They're, you know, New Balance in Australia became a sponsor, and they insisted. You know, when I met with them, I'm like, one pair every 4 months is fine. They're like, no, every 2 months. And I'm like, no, every 4 months. So he insisted. Well, every 2 months. I was like, okay.
Well, that's good.
Well,
you were probably
what that meant really
burning
is I had,
through rubber.
Well, I had, like, optimum support the entire time.
Right.
So, of course, it starts with your feet and comes up through your ankles, knees, and hips, and back, and everything. So I don't have any residual effects at all from walking 14,000 plus miles.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And yeah,
so I really
plus,
do
because you
them
still
credit.
Walk all the time.
I and yeah, plus.
That was just one 5-year stretch, right?
Right.
Should we keep walking this way?
Sure.
Does this keep going around? I don't even know. Actually, I haven't walked around this lake. I should describe the scene because I like to do that when I'm in person. It's a, it's just a really beautiful lake. It's a city park, but pretty serene.
Yes, and if you get the right view, you can get the mountains in
oh, yeah?
the background.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, lots of bikers and walkers and puppies and babies and so yeah, we love
dogs
this park.
There.
Yes.
Hi. It's a beautiful sunny day, and one of the reasons I started with the question about my mom is because actually in February 2002, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and she's a survivor. She's
wow.
she's here. She's okay.
Good.
So I just wanted to look you in the eye and say a personal thank you for all the thank work you. That you've done, because,
thanks.
You know, that is something that's personally affected my life and the lives of many other people. In fact, I was just doing some research last night on breastcancer.org. It said 1 in 8 U.S. women will develop invasive breast cancer. You know, how did breast cancer impact your life, and what was it about that cause that kind of merged your adventure with creating global awareness around that?
Well, I'll tell you, I just really always want to be clear on this, because it wasn't as if I personally was affected and it launched me out the door and I just kept going,
mm-hmm.
as some reporters have reported. So there's one thing I learned is about the media.
Sure, and yeah. That's so, a whole other conversation, yeah. probably.
So that was not the case.
Yeah.
The reality is that I always wanted to do this walk. Since I was a kid, I wanted to go walk around the world. And that's how I wanted to go discover the world. But they were thinking so far outside the box, I thought, that'll never happen. I'll never actually say it out loud, right? So as I got older into my 30s, and it started coming up into the forefront of my mind, at the same time, there was this kind of collision with that idea
yeah.
getting clearer. And a number of women in my world were being diagnosed with breast cancer
mm-hmm.
this one particular year.
I think everybody knows somebody, you know?
Yeah. And it was so suddenly in my immediate world. I had an aunt who survived it, another aunt who did not survive it. I had a very good friend in Denver, a very prominent community member in Vail. It was so suddenly in my world that I was just thinking about it all the time. And that's when I thought, that's what I'll do that walk for, that I've always wanted to do.
Mm.
And I put the two together, and was with just one of the best moves I ever made. And I've decided that I could never get breast cancer at this point with everything I've done for breast cancer. So it's really a precautionary thing, see?
Right. Yeah, you had an interesting story in your book about a doctor who told you that, actually, that you can't get it because for some reason
it doesn't run on
your
my
family,
mother's
which
side
is a
of the
total
family.
Yes. Fallacy.
Yeah, but, that's what happened is I, when all these women in my world were being diagnosed with breast cancer, I just got nervous, so I went to the doctor to ask for a mammogram. I was probably 34 years old at the time. And he said, oh, you don't need to worry about getting breast cancer because it doesn't run on your mother's side of the family.
Right.
So what do I know? I went, that's right. fantastic news.
Right. And then, of course, that's, yeah.
And then I realized that wasn't true.
Can't always trust doctors, right?
I'm afraid not.
So I think it's interesting because we're about 100 miles, roughly, from where you started your walk. You started... in Vail, but the genesis of that walk, as you mentioned, it was a dream of yours. That didn't start in Vail, right? So there was a time in your life, I guess, when the idea got planted.
Yeah, I was 12 years old, and I was in Minneapolis, grew up in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a year, I was 12 years old, and I really started to discover that there was this whole big world going on around me. And I think 12 years old, if you talk to people, 12 years old is really when they start seeing the world as a bigger place beyond their backyard and their friends and the bike and the tree. And for me, it was 12, and I started reading the newspaper, Minneapolis Star and Tribune. Minneapolis Tribune.
I could actually hear a little bit of your accent from Minnesota.
I refuse to believe it. No, you don't.
I do. I
no,
can detect a Midwest accent.
It's
I caught it a little bit.
Time. Boat. Anyway, so I started reading the paper,
yeah.
and I started reading about all these places that I've never heard of, and it really just got me curious about how the world ticks. And then in the Minneapolis Star and Tribune one morning,
this way.
Okay, I saw this photo of a man. walking down an empty highway with a big floppy hat on his head. And
yeah.
And he was pulling a baby buggy or a trailer of some sort. And I just remember going, you know, reading the caption, and it said David Kunst walking down, I think it was Nebraska, some Nebraska road, on his way home to Minnesota to become the first man to walk around the world.
Mm.
And I thought, wow, I didn't know you could think of such a thing if you were from Minnesota.
Right.
And it just struck me.
Yeah.
That man is just putting one little foot in front of the other.
He was from the same place you were, and there was a bit of a, kind of like a moment there where he just like light bulb started going off.
It really did. It was the simplicity of just putting one foot in front of the other. But when you chain those tiny steps together, they can become so powerful that they can serve as your transportation around the world and across borders into these different cultures and climates and religions and languages and foods and peoples. And oh, that got me so excited. I thought I can do that. You know what I did? I still remember this. And I didn't tell anybody, but I went out and I walked around the house. I walked around the house.
Really?
For hours
right
I walked
then?
Around
really?
The house. Yes.
No kidding. As soon as you got the idea.
I did. Walked around the house and around the house. And I thought, well, I can do it.
Hey, but really, that's all it takes, right? Putting one foot in front of the other.
There you go. If I can walk around the house for 3 hours, I might as well take on the world.
Well, we know there's a lot more involved, but That's the beauty of childhood innocence, right?
It's just
I can walk around the house because I can do this. But so you sounds like you were really getting after it right away, which is pretty interesting. And of course, there's a big leap between having an idea when you're 12 and then actually doing it. So how old were you when you started your walk?
I was 37
okay.
when I started walking. I was 42 when I finished. So
you were pretty like kind of set up in terms of life. You had a job, you had sort of you were living somewhere.
A job and a mortgage and an IRA and a 401k and a good job and
all that stuff.
Yeah.
People have to leave behind when they go to do something.
Yeah, and it really was how to pack up a life.
Yeah.
You know, so it really is, you know, what do you do with your mail? Do you forward your mail? And this is you know, 1997, 1998 is when I was planning it. 1999, I left. So this is, for all intents and purposes, we really did not have the internet connection that we have right now.
Right.
So it was just at the very infancy of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to stop your mail, you had to call every individual piece of junk mail you had. And you know what I mean?
Right.
I remember taking stacks of junk mail and calling them one by one. Yeah. Please stop this. Please get me off your da-da-da. And they said, okay, well, it might take 6 months. You know, so it was a draw. It's not this instantaneous push the button and all your mail will stop kind of
era. It's a process getting, stripping down and getting rid of everything.
It was. Basically. I remember I gathered up everything with a big U-Haul and
What was that like emotionally when you're, I think that's, it's not just a physical process of like unloading, you know, your apartment and all this stuff, but you're also, you have to kind of release things emotionally as well. Was it difficult to start that journey and know you were leaving all this stuff behind, the comforts of home? Because there's a lot of unknowns
ahead. Right, it wasn't.
Ahead.
It just so no, wasn't.
You,
no.
It just felt right.
It did. And I remember when I did load up all this U-Haul and I drove it to a big flea market in Denver and I sold it all. Sold it all by about 3 o'clock that afternoon and I returned to this empty condo. And it was so liberating.
Yeah.
It really was. It was like, okay, next. Because I didn't want my belongings to own me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I didn't want to take care of them.
Sure.
I still had about 9 boxes of stuff, and I put them away in a little storage shed, and that was it. And, it was very liberating. Because there's focus. There's focus. It wasn't so much as letting go. It was moving forward to what I envision.
And you felt like
you
were getting taking some concrete steps that were making this dream an actual reality.
Yeah.
Which is important, I think, taking the small steps and then the bigger ones to eventually get there.
Yeah, there was no doubts. I think that's what I did not have that people struggle with. Well, you must have some doubts. So you want a foot in each world. I didn't have feet in both worlds. It was like, nope, I'm going for it. So.
And no pun intended when we're talking about feet in both worlds, right?
No, no pun intended. Now, you know, I'm not in that frame of mind anymore at all. And I don't have that focus anymore. So, you know, the thought of packing up my life at this point is, oh, geez, oh, who wants to do that?
Yeah.
This episode of Zero to Travel is presented by the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. From muddy jungle paths and snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder has the capability to take you to some of the most epic destinations on Earth. We're excited to partner with Nissan because our listeners know we love to celebrate the joy of exploring the world and finding the best off-the-beaten-path destinations to visit. And there's no better vehicle for that than the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. With 7 drive modes, the Pathfinder's available intelligent 4x4 is built for even the most epic journeys, and it even has the best towing capacity in its class, up to 6,000 pounds, so you can bring the fun with you. But Nissan also knows that it's not just about where you go. In a Pathfinder, the real fun comes from getting there, and that's something we love celebrating here on the Zero to Travel podcast. We believe that life is about finding that joy within the journey itself, and that's why we're thrilled to partner with Nissan to celebrate adventurers everywhere. So thanks again to Nissan for sponsoring this episode of Zero to Travel and for the reminder to chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures and enjoy the ride along the way. Learn more at NissanUSA.com.
I know you mentioned not having doubts, which is astounding, but I know you had fears like everybody, and you had a great quote that you said, "Fear comes from the unknown. My great plan was to get to know it."
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things I think that are even more unique to a woman going on a journey like this. You want to talk about some of the things that you were going through your mind when you're kind of getting ready to take those first steps, and you're like, "Holy crap! I got a lot of adventures ahead of me, and I don't know what's going to happen." That sort of fear of the unknown. What was going through your head?
You know, I wish I could remember what was going on. <like that. laughs> I did not keep a journal prior to leaving.
Hmm.
And I think I regret that, because I really wish I would have known what was going on in my head. I don't have any recollections of me being fearful because I was a woman. I don't remember ever having those fears.
Hmm.
There are some realities, but there was a lot of faith involved, faith that I could handle whatever came in my path. And there almost has to be this, dare I say, blind faith, a trust that I could handle it. And I think the things I'd done in my life until that point had given me security and proof that I could do that. I mean, I it's not like I left the womb for the first time and off onto the road. I'd done a lot of traveling. I understood kind of how the world ticked, as far as I know you've traveled a lot, and of course this podcast is about travelers. There is almost a community out there, this subculture of people traveling, and you create almost a community, don't you?
Yeah.
And you understand how connections and networking works out there, and frankly the people, the citizens from town to town, I had trust in them too. They would reach out and help, and boy, they did. In record numbers. Record numbers.
You had the faith in yourself, but also in humanity to come
really,
through.
Really
when,
did.
When they
I really
needed, yeah.
did. Call it naivety if you want. I called it faith and trust in the world and the system and the people.
Mm.
And I did trust that I had enough experience to tackle whatever came in my path.
And you may have noticed, just listening to the time frame that Polly, that you did your walk, there was a major world event that happened smack dab in the middle, 9/11. And where were you when that happened?
I was in Malaysia, which was my first Muslim country. And oddly enough, Malaysia is this country that has, it's a Muslim country, but it has like 40% Muslims and then 30% Buddhists. And then it's Tamil Indians and then miscellaneous.
Mm.
And so the first half of the country was pre-9/11, almost exactly to the mile, halfway through the country, which is their capital of Kuala Lumpur. That's when 9/11 struck. That's where I was. So the second half of Malaysia was that dodgy period right after 9/11, when everyone was on pins and needles around the world saying, what is America going to do?
Mm.
And so it was a very dodgy time. Happens to be the latter half of Malaysia was the more conservative Muslim area
as
well.
And that's where you were.
So this was this perfect blend of, you know, bad timing and bad place to be.
Yeah.
So it got a little, I think that there was a lot going on quite literally behind my back that I will never know. And I say that because police would show up all the time and surround me and urge me to keep walking. And they wouldn't tell me what's going on because they really couldn't.
You thought maybe that neighborhoods or people you were, things you were going through, or people were maybe...
Was there a threat somewhere? Because I was a high-profile American in their country right after these events, is what it was.
Yeah.
After 9/11, if I can take you back to that time, you know, flights stopped, travel stopped, especially in these moderate Muslim countries. They just stopped. And if something would have happened in one of those moderate Muslim countries like Malaysia, mm-hmm. something would have happened to a high-profile American, which I was in the country at that time, because there was a lot of press.
Yeah, because at that point, you've been getting a lot of attention.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if something would have happened to me, I think that would have hurt their tourism.
Mm.
And it's happened before, where just an American gets into trouble or whatever in one of those countries, and it makes international news, and then travel stops and their economy stops. So no one will ever know why these police kept showing up. But there was a period where they would just guard my hotel door at night, and I'm like, oh, hi.
Wow.
You know?
And there's you just on a walk, right? I mean, and all this stuff's happening around you.
Yeah, a lot of it, I will never know.
And exactly, I think in those countries anyway, I mean, you had a couple things probably, I wouldn't say going against you, but that made you stand out. You were a woman on your own. Mm-hmm. Are you of the Jewish faith?
Or? Well, my dad was Jewish. Yeah. So I tell people I'm the food side of Jewish.
But if, you know, anybody had found those things, I mean, there's some things that, you know, could be hot points for certain people.
That's exactly right.
And I'm not
so they don't care that it's just
generalize,
my father.
Right,
or, yeah.
talking about people that might be malicious for certain reasons. And I think one of the interesting cultural things that I want to talk to you about is, you know, kind of shifting off 9/11 and going onto your cause for breast cancer, because you had mentioned repeatedly, I guess, through some of my research for this interview, that this was something that wasn't really talked about in Muslim countries. And I wanted to ask you about that. Is it because it just involved breasts, or what was it?
It really is. So, and again, now this is 10 and 15 years ago, depending on,
yeah,
you know, where I was.
Sure.
So things could have changed at this point, but I doubt they have. Mm. But if, the breast is considered like the giver of life. And so if the breast gets sick, it's God's will and you accept it. Okay? So there's one thing. Second thing is that the woman will never say anything. She finds a big lump on her breast, she won't disrupt the family, and she certainly won't go to a doctor who might have to see her naked. So there were these issues, and they're going on. Yeah. So what happened in my case is that the Lions Clubs got involved in early Australia, Lions Clubs being, you know, these service organizations based in every town around the world, volunteer organizations. So they sort of adopted me. As a,
they took you in as one of their own.
They did, and they started passing me village to village, and eventually it blossomed, it exploded into this enormous international sponsorship. So by the time I got into the Muslim countries, it was an international sponsorship. And that just meant that from the big wigs right up top, I had their approval, and so the Lions Clubs kept helping me, doing fundraising, all the rest of it. So once the Lions Clubs are so highly regarded and highly connected and well-respected in Southeast Asia, even across India, so when they talk about something, everybody listens. Mm-hmm. It's okay to listen because they're the Lions Clubs.
Okay.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
And when they talk about something, even the government listens. That was crazy. That was just crazy to me. So here I'm walking in Malaysia. We're talking about breast cancer for the very first time. And because the Lions Clubs are talking about it, it's okay for the women to listen. It's okay for the women to accept that now the Lions Clubs are saying it's okay to go to a doctor and have them see you naked and check you out. It's okay.
It was being validated.
Yeah.
By an organization that was well-respected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a game changer.
Yeah.
And I was only in Malaysia for 2 months, but it was in the papers. There's 5 newspapers that represent the five different languages of Malaysia. Mm-hmm. And all five were covering the progress of this walk on average of three times a week. So it was essentially everywhere all the
time.
You
were a celebrity.
Yeah, walking Malaysia. And it was walking with, I mean, the Lions Clubs and now Rotary Clubs got involved as well, which are just as highly regarded. There were piles of people walking with me every day. I mean, 80, 100 people walking.
Really?
Oh, it was like Forrest Gump out there. Just walking on the roads.
How did it feel to have the energy of strangers coming to join you just to be a part of this, even just for a day?
It was thrilling and exhausting. It was absolutely exhausting because they change groups every 3 miles because they're going village to village. So there was a pile of people. Let's say there's 50 people, and they're walking with me. And then we come to the next town, and there's a pile of people greeting us. So you say goodbye to everyone. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. Thank you for nice
And you
to
want
to
have
you.
A
nice
personal connection nice with everybody.
And then you greet everybody else. Nice right. to meet you. And then you walk three more miles. It was like that for months. It was exhausting and
But these are things you couldn't predict when you started. I mean, you get all this backing, all the support, the way things come together organically, you just set off with the pure intention to raise awareness. And like you said, I mean, the world seemed to rally around you.
I'll tell you what was so funny, because for the years prior, the 3 years or so prior, while I was training so much, but at least doing my homework and organizing it all. I say not training because it's not like I was laying on the couch for a lifetime. That, well, I better get up and get in shape. I mean, I'd always kind of been a gym rat and I was, you know, whatever. So my training, quote unquote, was to read I was reading books a lot about people that had been through these endurance events and trying to get into the mind frame of the perseverance it's going to take. So what have other people done?
The mental perseverance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was reading a lot of books on that. So I was really preparing for years on how to be alone for long stretches and this kind of thing, right? What I'd never even thought about preparing for was the polar opposite of that. And that was the crowds of people. And they're pulling and pushing and they're crowds and the lifting on occasion. And I didn't prepare for that. So I was going through a tough time there, trying to find, you know, as Americans, we like to find our balance.
Yeah.
You know, and,
sure.
Yeah, they don't care about
space. Yeah, you don't have the option to, hey, I just want to be alone for a little while.
They're not going to let you alone.
Yeah.
Not at all.
And you're
all.
Also, because you're carrying the weight or representing something bigger than just you, and that's also something you have to do, I think, that you can't just be like, hey, everybody just back off for a minute, all right?
Exactly right. It's exactly right. I had to really form this balance. And then, you know, so I'm grateful to the nines. You can't even imagine, you know. And then you're exhausted. And then you have to realize that this isn't about me. This is about them wanting to be involved with something bigger. Mm-hmm. And I had a conversation with my dad during that crazy time in Malaysia. And he says, let them help you. Mm. Just let them help you.
Kind of let go a little.
Thrill for them. And because I'm not used to having people pounce on my every need, you know? Mm-hmm. Banana. Yeah. Here you go. The girl needs a banana. Somebody get a banana. People jump on their phone. Do you need a banana? Do you need a banana now? I'm like, wow.
Snapping your fingers. I want a piece of fruit. Get the lady some fruit. That's great. I want to ask you about the mental perseverance you mentioned, because you said you prepared mentally by reading some books, but I don't think, of course, anything can't really prepare you for the actual reality of it. What did you learn on that perseverance side? What does it take in your head, like compared to, I guess, what you read and then what you actually experienced? Do you have some key takeaways that you want to share that, you know, kind of would give maybe some advice for somebody looking to do something larger like this?
I don't know that the books necessarily taught me this, but this is how I looked at it regardless. I looked at it as almost a contract. This is a contract I have for 5 years, contract with myself. So that was one thing. So if you have a bad day at work, you have a contract at work, you don't have a bad day and throw your arms up and like, well, I'm out of here.
You still show up the next day.
You show up, you persevere right through it. And so that's one thing. I just thought about it as a contract. I got to tell you, I really thought of it like there wasn't an option. There was not an option in quitting. That wasn't an option. And think about it. When something's not an option, you're not going to waste your time and energy on it. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you're not going to the moon this weekend. It's not an option. So why would you waste all this time and energy on that, right? So that was what it was for me. Now, if I'm going through a tough time, there are other ways to, other avenues to pursue as opposed to just flying home. So that's how I looked at it. Yeah. Well, frankly, I didn't even have to look at that. It wasn't even an option.
Full commitment. And there was no, it just, yeah, you weren't going to go back until it was done.
No, it's also as simple as I expected tough times.
Yeah.
It's not like they came blind to me. I did not expect things to run smoothly, and then when they didn't, I go, why me? you know?
That's a huge point.
It really is.
Yeah.
So when you start a business, when you get married, when you have children, you better wake up. Things are not going to run smoothly. Right. Newsflash.
When you live on planet Earth.
Thank you.
Right? I mean, so it's just knowing when those come, it's your reaction to them. Essentially.
Right. And I, this is how I did it. I caught myself thinking this one time, like, you know, I'd hit a tough time. And it was almost, I went, okay, here we go, you know?
Yeah.
And you brace yourself and you, you structure it out and you reach out to people. You ask for help. You get all the opinions and all the facts. Then you make a decision. And it was really about, you know, restructuring and accepting tough times. Now, I really did notice this pattern that was going on, though. It was like good times, then bad times, then good times, then bad. And you see this flow, this ebb and flow, which really pulled me through the tough times. You know, it's like, okay, this too shall pass kind of mentality. And that helps. The problem was, then when I was having good times, it was like, oh boy, here we go. So I had to, again, find that balance. But
yeah.
It really does pull you through once you've been through it a couple of times. It's like, you know, when you're going through some tough times, that doesn't mean it's the beginning of this trend that's going to go on forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just your bump.
Let's talk about that hill. Let's go to the top of the hill first.
Okay, the good times?
I just want to ask you about a time that maybe... it could even have been a private moment for you. It could be anything, really, where it just, everything just felt, you just felt like amazing. Or you just felt on top of the world
Really great question, because usually a lot of times when people ask your best moments, they are for me private moments, because there are some big milestone events, like Gandhi's granddaughter greeted me on the way into Mumbai as I was finishing my India stretch. That's
an
a
honor.
Big moment,
yeah.
Right? And she gave me a private tour of his house and all the rest of it. But for me, it is those private moments. I remember two in particular, and they were both just me walking, and it's just like the light is right, the weather is perfect, and I have my plans in place, and I just feel complete and whole and happy with it. And one time was just, I remember walking in Australia when the Lions Clubs really started getting involved, and that relationship was getting stronger and stronger and clearer, and I was having fundraising events almost every night, which of course is exhausting.
Yeah.
But it had been so unbelievably successful, beyond my wildest dreams, frankly, beyond. And I just remember one day, I was by myself, I knew exactly where I was going, I felt comfortable. But I was just pushing my buggy Bob, and the sun was just right, and the weather was perfect, and just walking across this big bridge, welcoming me into this small town, and I was all by myself, not a car around.
Yeah.
It was just a perfect moment. Going, wow.
Yeah.
It's really settling in nicely, isn't it? And the second moment was very similar, but I was walking into London, walking into the Westminster, across the Westminster Bridge at night, and the hustle and the bustle, and it's dark out, and the people are... hustling around, and I see Big Ben in the Parliament building, and it's like, wow, I had this reality of, I've walked here. This is my moment.
Yeah.
Pushing my buggy over the bridge with all the chaos going on, and me just watching it across the Thames River sparkling, and really a great moment.
Thanks for sharing that. I find when you are traveling, it is those moments that really do stand out. Like I said, the private moments in your head where you're just like, wow, everything just feels perfect right now. Oftentimes, I think some of the lower moments maybe can be quite the opposite. They're usually externally related, I think. Yeah. And then you have to kind of internalize and process and kind of come to peace. I don't know if you found the same, but I wanted to hear about maybe some of those tougher times. That could be general country, or just a leg of the trip, or it could be, you know, something inside that you were struggling with during a period of time. Maybe we take a walk a little bit this way.
Yeah. One of the toughest times I had that I really struggled through was walking through India. And yeah. it was external. And I wonder how much was internal. I found out years later that, well, I was on malaria pills.
Yeah.
And I found out years later that taking malaria pills can affect you mentally. And, you know, someone tells me
were you
this
taking
like
Lariat
10 years later.
Or?
I have no idea.
Yeah, because, yeah, there's definitely side effects.
So
sure.
Who knew?
Right.
I just figured it was India. And, you know, that's the end of it.
Could have been related to...
That's why I'm impatient and and aggravated and this kind of thing. So someone 10 years later says, you know... Did you find yourself really impatient? And I'm like, well, yeah, but I thought that was just India. So I wasn't proud of myself as I walked across India. I'm proud that I made it because I doubt anyone else on the planet could actually do that right after 9/11 and riots going on and the whole thing.
Because it was so intense for you?
It was. It was a different culture, and it was... not just Indian culture, but it was right through the tribal areas and the almost stalking of people. And so there was a culture clash and people trying to tell me what to do because that's the, you know, men trying to control the woman kind of thing.
Right.
I had a plan.
Male-dominated society.
It really was. Yeah. And so there was a lot of that, extreme heat.
Yeah.
And...
physically and mentally challenging almost every moment.
I had upped the mileage as well from about 16 miles a day on average to about 26 miles a day on average. So it was also exhausting. So there was all of that and the hassling. I mean, there was just harassment. Mm. So again, I think I had a valid reason to be impatient and snappy and all this stuff. But then I find out years later, oh, that could have been it. I'm like, no, I don't think so. I'm not going to use that as an excuse.
yeah. But I mean, of course, there's something to that. But you had a lot kind of to deal with there, I'd say. I wanted to ask you about walking as a mode of travel because, you know, I think we can idealize it sometimes, you know, because if you think about walking, you think about those moments that you describe where it's like, oh, you know, everything's perfect and you're walking across the nice bridge and the cute town. You don't think about like the time you have to walk like in an industrial area by the airport or something like that. Did you end up in some random sort of weird, I mean, I'm sure you did, but what was it like when you ended up in those types of places? Is it just like you might have gone for days, maybe, I would imagine, in just some not so scenic places.
Yeah.
I mean, did you find that how did you kind of process that? Was it like, hey, this is just part of the journey? Or you know, where you're just like, hey, I can't wait to get to the next, you know, beautiful mountain view.
It was part of the journey. I accepted it for what it was. I really did, because you can't expect to walk around the world and have a scenic view the whole time. That was never my the thought in my head. I'll tell you, you know, people have different comfort zones. So when I would ask someone directions, again, this is before GPSs and such, right? For the most part, I had maps, but sometimes the maps weren't as detailed as I needed. So I would ask a local that I'm just run into on the road or something. I'd say, can you tell me which way to, you know, whatever town? I remember this happened in New Zealand. Can you tell me, is this the right way to Wellington? Well, yeah, but you can't walk there. I was like, you can't? Well, no, that'll take you, you know, 8 hours. I'm like, okay.
I started in the United States. Those conversations must have been hysterical.
Well, they were. So other people's comfort zones, and they don't know what you're doing,
right.
And you don't necessarily want to explain it to everybody.
Right.
So I'm like, well, that's okay, but it's this way, right? So my point is that some people would tell me,
you don't want to go that way because it's ugly and it doesn't have this a shoulder on the road.
Right.
Or it's
They're
dangerous.
They're just looking out for you, kind of.
And then it's just perfect. It's fine. It's fabulous. And then other people, in fact, turn out to be exactly what they said. And I'm
right.
like, wow, this really is bad. You know, but you didn't know who to trust because they have different comfort zones than you do.
Yeah.
So I remember that was always an issue. Do I believe this guy? It's not like he's lying, but yeah. his comfort zone's different. So that was always a big
That's problem. True, yeah. It must be a fun thing, though, to have in your back pocket sometimes if you're having a conversation. You know, you could always whip out the, hey, I'm walking around the world card. It's like, this is really going to blow this person's mind right now.
Some people don't get it at all. They'll, you know. And,
they don't believe
and
it.
And frankly, I don't really bring it up. Not that I'm not proud of it, but it's yeah. kind of a conversation hog.
Sure,
you know,
because yeah, everybody's going to ask you a million questions.
Right, and yeah. it's not
just refer them to the Zero to Travel podcast.
Okay, I'll
get everything.
I'll do that.
I'm kidding.
What does that mean? Did you do a walk in every country? No, that's not. It means right. I started and just put one foot in front of the other, and then finished in the same place.
Yeah, and that's the empowering thing I think about thinking about walking. I guess I mean you know we're taking a walk right now, just around this lake, but we could in theory just keep going. You have in fact done that. And it's just, it, even though I understand it, like conceptually, it still amazes me. I think what you did is really spectacular and special. Got a few more questions for you. I wanted to ask you about the price you pay for something like this. I think anytime, of course, when you do something, you're giving up something else. I would imagine, I would venture a guess that you would say that you've gained much more than you've sacrificed. But what did you sacrifice by doing this, do you think? You know,
yeah.
now in hindsight, you've had some time to, you know, some distance from this.
You know, it's funny you say that because me and a friend were just talking about retirement. And they're like, yeah, we're getting ready to retire. And I'm like, I'm just starting. <You know? laughs> I made a very conscious choice
yeah.
to live my life the way that I did. It wasn't this, you know, being naive about someday I'll have to retire. Mm-hmm. Very aware of that. So I feel like I'm getting a late start career-wise. Mm-hmm. So with that said, though, I'm passionate about my career now.
Right.
And
it's
I would not have the career that I have if I hadn't gone the route that I did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do motivational speaking about my walk, but I also have a publishing consulting
yeah.
company.
Okay.
And so I drive consult authors right through the publishing of their book. And that stemmed from my book about my walk.
Mm-hmm.
So it took me 5 years to walk around the world, 6 years to write the book about it. Etc. So I guide people through that. So it would not have happened. You see the chain of
sure.
the dot to dot that led me to this career.
Yeah.
So I feel very at peace and full of passion for what I do. And I would not have had. I wonder sometimes if I hadn't had the guts to go ahead and do that walk, where would I be today?
Right.
I'd probably be working some job that I hate and struggle with every day. Ugh.
Here's a quick powerful exercise. If you think about one or two of your big goals, and then you fast forward a few months from now, what can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If one of those goals for you is learning a new language, or even just a little bit of a language to enhance your next trip, you should absolutely get Babbel. They have quick 10-minute lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts. You can actually start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations, exactly what you want as a traveler. I just downloaded it and went into the Norwegian course area thinking, oh, I've got this. Immediately made a bunch of grammar mistakes that they corrected, and I was like, oh, I've been doing this wrong. So I'm already leveling up and learning, and you can get Babbel now. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/zero to travel. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/zero to travel, spelled babbel.com/zero to travel. Rules and restrictions may apply. Thank you to Babbel for supporting today's show. Hey, you lovely listeners, Jason here. And did you know we have a newsletter and it's free? You can sign up over at zerototravel.com/newsletter. You're going to get money-saving tips, destination advice, some musings, little personal updates, all the stuff that you don't get right here on the podcast. And we can keep in touch. So sign up over there, zerototravel.com/newsletter. Get your weekly dose of travel value, totally free. Thanks for listening.
I was wondering if you'd be willing to share something that maybe you haven't shared before from your experience. Maybe it's something that people don't really know about you, or maybe it was a moment, or just something that would surprise even people that you may know? I mean, did anything pop in your head there? I'm just curious, not to dig in too deep, but I mean, 5 years of experience walking around the world, and I know, you know, that can be good or bad, but I mean, yes, I'm just curious, exactly. Is there something you haven't shared? You know, you've written a book, you've done all these talks all over the world.
I don't know. That is a good question. I'll have to peruse it. I mean, I've told a couple of friends certain things that that are just silly. Yeah. You know, I don't know that they're that private per se, but I remember, like, I had to travel as light as possible.
Yeah.
Right? So I had one pair of pants. Okay. One pair of pants.
Okay. Yeah, practical stuff.
Yes. Right. One pair of pants. So it occurred to me after, like, 6 months of this, you know, I've worn the same pair of pants for 6 months every single day. I'm going to see if I can go to a year. So I, sure enough, I wear one pair of pants every day for a year.
Right on.
And then they're full of holes and everything. I said, I'm just going to cut them off into shorts, and it's summertime. So I wore these things as if this was something to be proud of, right?
And I dig that. I think it is, right? Actually. Yeah, they must be hanging up and framed somewhere.
So, and they're sunburnt and all the rest of it. And then it occurs to me one day, you know, I probably shouldn't brag about that. That's pretty gross.
Well, you're talking to the right audience, because I think most people listening think it's pretty cool. That's so funny. Do you keep some keepsakes? Do you have some keepsakes from your trip?
Surprisingly few.
Yeah.
Surprisingly little. You know, I really didn't do any shopping. Mm. I remember one thing I bought, but...
You're carrying everything.
Yeah. And I had no money for that kind of extra stuff. I really just was taking my memories and my photos for the keepsakes. But when I was in Turkey, for some reason, I just decided to... I wanted to buy a backgammon board. You know, that was it. I've got this, you know, handmade, state-of-the-art backgammon board. So of all the things around the world, I got this state-of-the-art backgammon board.
I love playing games, so I say backgammon's fun.
I think
that was a good buy.
Thank you. Yeah, of course, nobody here knows how to play it, so none of my friends anyway. So it sits there by itself.
Right.
But that was one of my purchases. Now, a lot of people gave me things, which I thought was very funny, because that's another thing I didn't expect. So I kept, you know, shipping boxes home, because people would come up and give you gifts, you know, handmade blankets and, you know, stuffed animals and, you know, keepsakes and this kind of thing. And I remember some guy handcrafted a little Thai house in Thailand, and it's out of their teak wood, so that's very special to me. So I have some, but surprisingly little, and I really didn't do sightseeing per se either.
How long after you came home did it take to feel like, normal's the wrong word, because what's normal, you know?
Yeah.
Your normal life for 5 years was getting up and walking. To me, that's as normal as somebody getting up and going to work. Maybe not according to culture and society, but hey, that's what you're doing with your life. So you're getting up, you're walking, and people live their lives in many different ways. But, you know, you can't live that way forever. So then you came home to a spot. So you spent 5 years getting up, walking, on the move every day, or almost every day, at least just being on the go, accomplishing this thing. And now you're back home. What was it like settling back you came back to Colorado, I guess?
Yeah.
Was that difficult?
You know, it wasn't at all.
No.
And I know a lot of people have a tough time with that.
Yeah.
I didn't, and I think there's two different reasons. One is that I had been on the road for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm. You were ready.
I was really, really ready for that next chapter, which for me was settling in, nesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had been nesting, so I was 42 when I finished, and, you know, women go through their nesting phase, I think, earlier than that. So I could tell I was really starting to nest when I was I was walking across Kansas pushing my buggy, and I could just catch myself daydreaming about how I would decorate my condo. And
this is right when you were almost
I was almost home. Yeah. And I start planning how I'm going to decorate. And I mean, I was really nesting. Yeah. And then I would walk into these towns like Dodge City, Kansas, going, I could live here. Yeah, I could stay here. Maybe I'll just stop right here. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to get home. You know? So I really was nesting. I was very, very ready for a new chapter, which was digging roots deep in community and neighbors and friends and stuff like that. So
still takes time, I guess, to settle, though, or figure it out. Or,
yeah.
Or a reintegration period.
Yeah. The reintegration was so gradual. So it's not like I was plucked out of the tribal regions of India and then deposited into Denver, Colorado.
You still had to walk across the U.S.
Yes. Yeah. So I had my culture shock coming back into the States, and then I walked across the U.S. for like a year and a half. So I was getting used to the culture and all that stuff. And so by the time I landed, there was that whole year, actually, planning where I was going to stay when I finished. I was brand new to Denver. I knew two people, so that was enough to kind of get me started.
I'm curious, being from here, how did it compare walking through this country versus maybe some of the other countries you visited? Just as somebody who grew up here, I'm just curious what your experience was.
Mine, personally speaking, was the greatest time of my life.
Yeah?
Walking around the world and in the inadvertent era in which it was, meaning 9/11 and the immediate aftermath and the war in Iraq and all that, there was this great discovery of America from the other side. So I'm walking through all these countries where people migrated over to the United States and built this country. So I'm learning about it, and then I land in my country and there's one of rediscovery. And I'm seeing how all these other countries came together to build this one, and how it affected what we got out of them, and how we sort of cherry-picked these great things out of every culture and built our own. Do you know what I mean? And how it was the most special, beautiful, beautiful time. I feel so blessed in my life to have experienced that, that very, very, very few people do. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I haven't heard that. That's a really well said, eloquently put, I think. I hadn't thought of it in that way, but I mean, you're basically taking all of your experience on the ground and seeing how things were built here. I mean, that's
yeah. I would walk through, say, I remember walking in Italy on this little side road. I just, you know, happened to spot something in the forest that I just kind of poked my head in to see what it was, and it was this marker of an American soldier that had died there. So you're seeing that, and then you're seeing you know, the museums coming up through Europe about the wars there. And you're also seeing the language, you know. Of course, when you don't speak the languages, it's like your eyes being blurry, blurry, blurry. And then there's a word you understand, and it's like clear.
Yeah.
So it's like blurry, 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 cafe. Yeah, cafe, that came from here. Son of a gun, or bratwurst, or cookie. The word cookie, waffle. I mean, all these, mine are about food.
Yeah. I love food, too.
So all these words and foods and fashions that all came from this country, and people came and built America. So I was watching that, especially language. I just really developed this great love for language throughout my journey. And then coming into America and this great discovery, walking across America, the greatest time of my life. And yeah, I mean, people just, I record this in my book, that one day, like, nine people came and just gave me gifts. You know, you, that girl doing that walk. Well, here's some
muffins whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Some homemade juice. And here's some honey from my backyard. So, and we own a winery. Come on up. I'm like, okay.
Wow.
So it was a beautiful time. And I really wish that any business major or a political major would just walk across a country or a state and instead of a thesis and just really discover and talk to people, talk to the leaders. Because I was going dinner table to dinner table talking to, you know, teachers and mayors and farmers and, you know, hearing how
interacting with every type of person in the community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And seeing how policies affect them. And it's like, this is a beautiful way it's a beautiful university, going out and talking to everybody.
I always find it shocking, too, when you get back to the States after being gone, and then you can actually, you mentioned language, you can actually understand everybody. And you're like, wow, I know what they're saying. This is weird.
Suddenly everything's in focus.
Before I let you go, I wanted to get some tips from you. This is going to be, you probably have a ton, but somebody that's listening, and I think everybody's got some, you know, big dreams and big goals or ideas inside that they think about. What are some tips that you would say, either on the mindset side or even the practical side, for bringing a big dream or a big idea like this into reality?
First, I would get your team together. When I say your team, that doesn't necessarily mean they even know about it. But who are you going to turn to for an emergency? Is that going to be your mother, your father? Is it going to be your best friend? Who are you going to turn to for going through the tough times that will inevitably happen, that you are going to have an emotional breakdown and you need someone to lift you and get you focused? Is that going to be your
Surround
best
yourself
friend?
With the right people.
Yeah. So you create your team. And I did. You know, that might be the 10 people sitting in front of you, and I'm going to turn to you for that and you for that and you for that. So that's one thing. I would say also about creating the people around you, only surround yourself with people that are supportive. If that means essentially walking away from people that aren't supportive, I have to be an advocate of that. If they're that big and important a dream to you, because those people really can drag you down, and unfortunately they exist. So
sometimes they're close to you.
And sometimes they're close to you. Now, lucky for me, the people close to me were very supportive. There were people on sort of the second or third tier of my life that weren't. I really had no problem walking away from that. But I did not want to drain a lot of energy trying to explain myself or whatever. So I just think it's that important. I am a big fan, and I found out later when I became, you know, more in the professional area, that all these professional development classes and whatever. I'm like, wow, well, that's what I did. And that is to write everything down. First of all, you can write down your vision. You can write it down stream of consciousness in story form, or you can write bullet lists. And I really did it in bullet lists. I did it in bullet lists. So, for example, I wrote down my route, town to town to town to town every day, and I was always 2 months ahead of myself. Mm-hmm. I knew exactly. If someone said, I will meet you on November 14th at 4 o'clock at this restaurant in your town, I would be there every single time. Not once was I even late.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I had nailed, and I didn't want to go beyond 2 months because, you know,
it's unpredictable.
Yeah. There's health and injury and whatever could get in your way. But 2 months in advance, if people were going to help me, maybe even do a fundraising event, they had to depend on me. So when I wrote it down, it was very, very clear for me constantly. I looked at that every single night, every night. And I do that in the professional world now. I write down things every night, step by step, so nothing is overwhelming.
Yeah.
Step by step. And in fact, it's so funny. I think I took a class one time and someone said, just do 3 things. And if you get overwhelmed with those 3 things, narrow it down to 3 smaller things. If it gets down to go to your computer, number one. Turn on the computer, number two.
Break it down to the smallest steps possible.
If you have to. And sure enough, I've done that before. Just go to my computer. Just turn it on and find the document you're going to work with. There's 3 things. Yay!
Yeah.
And what happens is the overwhelm disappears, mm-hmm. and you start to see momentum. That's what happens. You start to see momentum. So trust. Do 3 small steps that are hardly worth mentioning, if you have to break it down into that.
And it literally is 1 step at a time, whether you're walking around the world, physical steps, or you know, breaking something down to action steps you need to take. And
I really do follow my own advice, I promise you.
Yeah.
Because writing a book is a monster event as well. And I had to do that. Go to the computer, turn it on, get to chapter 3.
Oh, okay. Phew. Well, I'm done for the day. Can I get a glass of lemonade?
So, just work on the opening sentence. Okay.
Well, the book is, of course, 3 miles per hour. And I can't thank you enough for just spending the time to come out here on this beautiful day and have this in-person chat with me and sharing your story with everybody here, you, the listener. And all your perspectives and everything that you have done for global awareness for breast cancer, not only here, but in nations all over the world, nations that sounded like at that time really needed somebody to come in and like make this okay. And you probably will never know the impact you've made. And
never know.
It's, you can't know, but you can feel, I'm sure, great about what you've done. And I want to say thank you, just with my personal experience with breast cancer. And I'd like to just say, you know, your story is amazing and thanks. And I would like to give you a hug if that's okay.
Thank you. And greetings to your mother.
Thank you. And Polly's book has won 6 national awards. She has a documentary, she is speaking, and obviously works with publishers and other authors. Check out her site, polylatofsky.com. That's LETOFSKY. Check it out, and thank you again.
Thank you, sir.
There you have it, my walk with Polly. What an incredible human being. Awesome. What a treat, too. And it was great for me to pull this out of the archives as a highlight to be able to experience this interview again. It really took me back to Colorado. It took me back to that walk with Polly. And I was just excited to share this with you again. Got so many incredible interviews like this in the archives. Don't be afraid to dive deeper into the feed if you want some more travel goodies. Now, let me talk about walking, one of my favorite things to do. I love to walk. I don't know about you. I don't own a car here where I live in Norway. I'm fortunate in that I can walk about 12, 15 minutes down a hill through the forest to get to the subway. Takes a little longer uphill, I guess. The stores are down by that station as well. I can walk to a lake where you can swim. There's a forest right outside of my house. So a lot of good stuff around here in walking distance. But also I set myself up for that because I love to walk. I don't want to have to get in a car to do everything. And yes, it's more convenient. But the thing about walking is, I don't know, it just slows you down, right? Not just physically. Takes longer to get places, of course. Sometimes that's inconvenient. Little story, yesterday we got home from a trip. We're visiting my in-laws and we needed milk. My son's 3. He needs his milk. He needs his milk bottle at night. And we didn't have anything. So, you know, need to take a walk down the store instead of driving and being back in a very short amount of time, just getting it done. Yeah, I was tired. We've been traveling all day. But I took a walk down to the store. So what? Took a little longer. Had to walk back up. I got some exercise. I got some time to think. I got to chat with my mom on the phone. It was all good. And I find that walking, even though things take longer, is better for my mind. It's better for my soul. Whenever I take a long walk, I sometimes listen to podcasts and music and other things like that. But I try to spend at least half of the walk without any distractions, no digital stuff. So if I go for a trail run or if I go for a long walk or whatever, I may or may not listen to something, but I only do that for half of the time generally. And then on my way back, I will just take the headphones out and just walk and think. And you know what? I should do that both ways because that's when my best ideas come. That's when I feel like, I don't know, I just get all these sort of random ideas just by walking. It's something about creating that physical space for yourself and at the same time creating that mental space for yourself. So all this being said, we talked a lot about walking today and travel. If you haven't taken some long walks lately or you just haven't made walking a part of your life recently, that would be my challenge, a little call to action for you, if you will, coming out of this show. Take a walk. Take a walk and do something that you've never done by foot before. So if you've never walked to your neighborhood store, you've always driven and gotten your groceries that way, walk and do it next time. Or next time you go to the movies, walk to the movie theater. You know, if Polly can walk around the world, certainly we can walk somewhere in our town and do something. Walk to a restaurant that you've never walked to before. It doesn't have to be far. Just do it. You'll find you might recapture some of that travel energy, some of that feeling of adventure. It's a great thing. I feel like walking invites that because you're kind of vulnerable, right? You're out there walking. Walking slow, there's no escape. And you kind of have to encounter what you encounter and deal with it, whether it's traffic or people or whatever. It's fun. So anyway, a little fun challenge for you this week. Take a walk somewhere you've never walked to before. Let me know how it goes. Get in touch. Jason@zerototravel.com is my email address. You know it. And you can also leave me a voice message. I leave a link in all of the show notes where you can just click on a button and press another button and you record a voice message. 90 seconds or less is super easy to do. And I will hit you back with a voice message if you leave one. So please go ahead and get in touch. Either way, if you don't have time for that, no worries. I appreciate your presence here. Thank you for being a part of this community. You keep me going. You are the reason I do this, and I want to thank you so much for that. Before I let you go, a couple shout outs in the community. I want to say thanks. I got some really nice reviews lately, and this one, Marco Landon, who said, "It's not often that I will discover a podcast that entices me to binge over a dozen episodes in one go." Okay, first I have to hit pause here and say thanks. I'm binge worthy, man. Thank you so much. That's one of the ultimate compliments. Anyway, goes on to say, "I'm a traveler who's been place bound for too long now, and my wife and I are currently paring down, preparing to leave everything behind and live for a few seasons in various places around the world. Love it. Jason's podcast is keeping me pumped for leaving. Keep my eye on the goal. I suspect we'll also be listening as we slow travel the planet. If you have itchy feet, this podcast will surely launch you out the door, or at least help you bask in the reverie of the traveler's experience." Thank you so much for that 5-star review, and I really wanted to read this out to give you a shout out for your intention. You and your wife, paring down, getting ready to leave everything behind, live for a few seasons around the world. I love that. Just what a great intention, right? I'm just going to live for a few seasons in various places around the world. That sounds nice, doesn't it? Congrats to you, my friend. That's awesome. Here's another one from Nina. 5 stars. Love this podcast. This is one of my favorite travel podcasts. Always, because it's helped me think of travel differently. I've always wanted to take a sabbatical, but never considered the transition to travel and how much preparation goes into traveling full time. The episodes on transition to travel make my sabbatical dream seem much more realistic. I cannot wait to quit my 9-to-5 someday. Keep up the great work." Thank you, Nina. And it all starts with you. Not just taking this information in or listening to these interviews, yes, being inspired, but really considering that this is a possibility for you, whatever your situation is. So yes, that is the point, right? To share these stories and these experiences and allow them to empower you to do the traveling you want to do. That's the reason I highlight some of these interviews, because I want to give you a shout out for the things that you're doing, thinking about, working on, just setting yourself up for. All of you out there that are in this community, so many inspiring stories I get through email and through these reviews and everything like that. This is what keeps this podcast going for 7+ years. And it's not stopping. I'm not stopping. No, I'm going to keep it rolling. I love doing this for you. So anyway, thank you so much for your time today. I am going to leave you with a quote from Henry David Thoreau, who said, "An early morning walk is a blessing for the whole day." Says it all right there. Thanks again. And I'll see you next time. Peace and love.
This podcast has been brought to you by ZeroToTravel.com. Ideas and advice to make your travel dreams a reality.